Every pass felt like luck. Every failure felt like proof. You've aced tests before, but now in this degree, when you seldom do, you never feel like it was you. Am I actually good enough or just getting by, you wonder. Even as a student, can you step into your full potential before the world affirms you that you have? Today, we are joined by postgraduate diploma in accounting sciences student at the University of Pretoria, Walter Madondo. And we chat about how you can step into your dormant potential with who you are and what you have, not tomorrow, not after CASA, but today. We also chat about the power of perspective on your potential and your standards, how he uses his faith to cultivate a formidable fortitude, the magnitude of the CA designation in Zimbabwe, lessons of leadership from his father, the difference between management and administration, being task-oriented versus time-oriented, and more. I hope you enjoy. Travelers on the road to CASA. I wanted to actually just leave you with one quote before this episode. This is a quote by Vincent van Gogh, a artist, one of the legendary artists. If I am worth anything later, I am worth something now. For wheat is wheat, even if people think it is grass in the beginning. Keep that in mind when you listen to this episode. Absolutely incredible. On to the show. Welcome back, my people. This is the Road to CA podcast, the show for aspiring chartered accountants to inspire, empower, and inform the difference makers of tomorrow. Today, we're joined by a man of purpose. You know, everywhere he walks with this fire in his eye. And I knew that one day that fire would ignite this conversation we're about to have. He's a child of God and therefore believes with every fiber of his being that he is in service and that he lives in alignment with his faith. Born and bred in Zimbabwe, he's a third year BCom Accounting Sciences student at the University of Pretoria. He loves everything business. He loves a good conversation. Perfect place. Perfect place, Walter, to be today. He's a son. He's a brother. He is Walter Madondo. Walter, how are you, brother?
I'm all right. How are you?
As I said earlier, I'm in anticipation. This conversation was in my mind, in the works for a long time.
I'm so glad to be here. I'm amazing. Having a good day.
That's fantastic, man.
Having a very good day. And my life is amazing. It's quite amazing.
Dude, okay, let's go back. Let's rewind. Mm-hmm. Where did accounting sciences begin for you?
To be honest.
Yeah.
My dad is going to listen to this, but I'm just going to say it. My dad applied for me.
Yo!
I wanted to be an actuary.
Yo!
And that was because of... I was better in math in high school, right? Math was the subject that really took off quite quickly, and accounting was not very good.
Mm.
So naturally,
interesting. Eh?
So I wanted to be an actuary, and I started to research about that. They get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
They're in demand everywhere.
Mm. Mm.
So I was like, oh, this is the perfect place to be. Then my father wanted me to be a CA because he loved the profession, right? He loved the profession because he had some CAs on his board and he's like, mm-hmm. No, man, you have to be a CA, mm-hmm. right? But I knew it had to be these two things. I was very good in chemistry, but I couldn't see myself being in business because the whole goal was to be in business. But I had to pass through something.
Yeah.
Right? Sciences were out of, engineering was not even an option. Medicine, not even an option. So I set myself for that. Then my father introduced me to many actuaries and CAs, and we started having these conversations just to open my mind to the profession. Sure.
That's a blessing, man. Talking to those guys at such an early age.
It was amazing, right? But this was early matric, like the fifth year out of the sixth year, right?
Sure.
So my father applied for me. Now, then I realized, because my father and my brother, I was in boarding school, remember?
Yes.
And they're doing the application. So I would only do whatever required me to do, but documents and all of those things. They were the ones who actually did that for me. And then I got accepted into UP accounting, right?
The best accounting program in the country.
True. And amazingly, they replied so quickly to us. I think it was in a week. I was like, okay, sharp. No, that's fine. What course was I? And then I asked my father, what course was it? He said, accounting. I said, okay. At that time, I applied to 5 universities. UCT, all of those. It's like, okay, accounting. So now when I was on the portal, I don't know what I was doing. Then I realized on the portal, my father had applied accounting sciences. I thought the second one would be actuarial science. Not even. It was economics. I said to myself,
no, your dad wants you to be a CA.
I said, you didn't apply in actuarial science. But at that time when I realized that, I already wanted to become a CA because of these conversations that I had with CAs. So at that time, I wanted to become a CA. Then I realized I actually had not applied for actuarial science. So really, in one of those times where I knew my father was right. For me, it was always about the end goal.
Business.
Being in, based on how my father trained me, my parents are business people.
What do your parents do?
Business, real estate, okay. Catering company, catering business,
okay.
And transport as well.
Okay.
But they are still at a small level. My mom has never worked for anyone. It's only my dad who has worked. Because I think my mom only worked for like 6 months. My dad's like, no, don't go to work. Then she was the one who was managing the businesses, if I'm not mistaken. And mom, if you're listening, please correct me. they never worked. So my dad used to work for a very long time, then he came out of it. And guess what? Every time we took a journey that wanted us to be in a car for more than 10 minutes, my father would say, right, gents, my brothers, look, this is how we are going to structure our companies. You understand? You are going to, he was even allocating at that point in time. At that time, he wanted all his sons to be CAs. So it's like, look, Walter, if you are running this business, right? And your younger brother is running that one and you're running that one, right? Farming as well. You're running the farming. You're running transport, catering. We can really get something out of it. And he was explaining these corporate structures to me. It was really amazing. I mean, at that time, we found it boring.
Yeah.
But imagine you're listening to that for about 10 years. Because my father always said, being employed will not get you money, will not make you rich, Walter, being employed. But I want you to become a CA. Then you get employed, that you may learn. Right?
That you may learn.
He says education doesn't make you money. But that's his perspective. He said education does not bring money, but it gives you reasoning capacity. It gives you reasoning capacity. That's all I'm paying you for. The reasoning capacity, it expands you. Not so that you can be rich. Not so that you can take care of us in our old age. No, not at all. So that was why. And it was always about that. Being in business. So it was not working backwards. What path? Because I had to go to university. So what can I pass through here? And it was accounting. And at that time, I only thought accounting as debits and credits. That's why I wanted to become an actuary.
Yeah.
Until I met CAs. I was like, oh my Lord.
What CAs did you meet? Like, what industries were they working? What stories did they tell you, if you can recall?
This was in 2020. Patrick. One of his name is Patrick. He was in the finance industry, if I'm not mistaken. And he would tell me most CEOs in the economy of Zimbabwe are CAs.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is where I want to be, right? So I was now intrigued.
Yeah.
So he would give me all these facts. And my dad, in fact, in the board, he gave an example because in his board meetings, there were CAs in that board meeting.
Mm.
And it's like, CAs are the ones who are coming up with these business strategies.
Mm.
Mm. So he gave me one example. He said, one of the CAs said, Mr. Madondo, you are managing your business wrong. You're supposed to be structured at A, B, C, D like that. So just those examples.
Yeah.
You see those examples coming up with solutions.
Yeah.
That was one of them. The other CA I talked to, who was it? My sister, who's now currently at EY, Yvonne.
Oh, wow.
She's a CA. She's a CA. No, not my blood sister, but we have big extended families. So my dad would tell me, my dad would tell me that she is helping her sister with her businesses, right? Because she's a CA, so she consults with her sister and all of those kind of things because she's a CA. She's seen everything. So that sort of gave me the right context of how I'm supposed to see the world.
Mm.
So my father gave me these examples of CAs and give me this guy who has so many trucks in Zim. His daughter is a CA. Now the daughter is managing the operations of the companies. Those kind of examples. Because that's the level I want to be in. You understand?
Yeah.
And so every time those examples are popping up, it's CA, CA, CA. Already it creates in you this picture that, okay, I have to be a CA.
Mm.
But at that time, I still did not know. I met this guy. Oh, man. First year. Peter. He was our tutor in first year.
Peter Pienaar. We actually had an episode with him. I need him back on.
that guy's amazing.
He is his fireworks.
He explained to me. That's the first time I was open to the degree. I said, look, Walter, this degree is like you have 4 degrees in one.
Yeah.
You are an auditor, a degree in auditing, a degree in financial management, a degree in taxation. And a degree in, what was the other one?
Accounting.
Accounting.
Yeah. Reporting.
Reporting.
Yeah.
So after that, I was like, oh.
Mm.
And then I was asking him now, so what do you do with those things? Like, no, you can work there, you can work there, you can work there. I said, oh, my days, I did not know.
Mm.
So I became more intrigued now.
Mm.
And now you had all these campus events where CAs are coming out, go and ask a question. I remember we had that PwC event when we were first year.
Yeah.
Amazing.
The one with House CA.
The one with House. You were organized. Weren't you part of
was
House
the one
CA?
That I was?
The one you organized for
was
us.
In 2022?
Yes, 2022. The one we had at Atlas.
Was I MC that time?
Yes, you were MC.
Okay.
That was you. I'm not. It's just clicking now that it was you. it's just clicking now that it was actually you who organized that one for us.
That is crazy.
That was amazing. That was amazing.
Did you attend the EY one that year as well?
EY one.
There was an EY event as well.
No, I did. I no.
Okay,
but it was a PwC.
That one always happens every year for first years. The PwC one.
Yes.
From House CA. That's interesting.
I remember now, and it so fits your character. That it so fits your character. You're hosting that program. Amazing.
Sure, man.
Just made the connection now.
Dude, I remember. I remember we had this conversation. It was by, I think, the auditorium, the amphitheater. And you said that you don't believe you can ever fail.
Not
you believe you can never fail. Can you explain that to us?
Not sure. Ah, man. Words are powerful, eh? They always come back to you. But that is so true. I think it all comes back from my faith. Based on what I read in the Bible, failure is not God's plan. Challenges are not failure. So really, you know, we see the world differently based on our experiences, based on the information we have acquired. What have I acquired? I've acquired what God has planned for my life. I've acquired what God has given me, right? I've been raised by two wonderful parents. So that forms how you see the world. So when you see something, when you see a setback or a challenge, how you look at it is very, very important. Your perspective is very, very important. I think it was Stephen Covey in his book. He talks about this brilliantly.
Seven Habits of Highly Effective
Seven People. Habits, right? The introductory chapter. It talks about perspective. Because your perspective, you act in the direction of how you think, how you see it, right? Because we see it differently. For example, if you receive a bad mark, right? I have definitely done that. You receive a bad mark. How you see that mark, we see it differently. Right? We see it differently based on, number one, our standards, how we grew up, where we are raised, your faith, all of those kind of things.
And you said bad mark. What does that mean? Do you know, for like a top student, bad mark is 60?
Certainly.
See?
Why? And there's a reason to that. If you're, the Bible says, to whom much is given, much is required.
It was Luke chapter 12. I have no idea.
So if God has invested so much in you, right? Or you have so much talent, right? Then you cannot settle for the bare minimum. That's where the subjectivity of it comes in. So a student who has been getting 80s or 90s, right? By the time they come to university, they're still getting those 90s. Or they have done it before. A 60 is an insult. Why? Because the level that you have been trained, right, is requires you to have that 90. You require 90 because you have done it before, right? So you've been trained in how to get a 90, right? Because you now think 90s. So a 60 is an insult. A 60 is a failure. Why? You're not performing to your potential. So failure, we cannot generalize success. We cannot generalize failure. We can't say 50 is a pass. It's not a pass, right? If I'm used to getting 80s and then I get a 50, that's a blatant failure. Why? Because I'm performing below my potential, below the gift that God has given, beyond the ability that I have now. You see? So, to me, that's what it means. And I, when I talk to some people, I say, what do you think you can get? What do you think your potential can get you? Okay, I think it can get me 65. So you shouldn't celebrate when you get a 60 because you're performing below potential. And that's how I view it. So based on how I've learned, what I've learned from my parents, from the word of God, based on that, now I see things differently. That's why I believe I can't fail.
So what do you see? Because I think a lot of us see that 60 or that 70 or whatever it is for us as the thing that defines our success. So now, if you can never fail, what is it that defines success for you?
In academia.
I mean, you said you can never fail. Is it just in an academic context? Is it in a life context?
Well, it's a life context.
It's a life context.
Why? Because the you see, the Bible, the Word of God is like a canvas, right? It gives you principles for approaching everything in your life, right? But you take those principles, it just gives you principles, and then you apply it in the areas that you want them to apply to. So, for example, academics, what I see as success. I am a person who wants to get an 80 in all the modules, right? So failure to me is failure to get an 80. Okay. I believe, Alunga, I genuinely believe in my life, based on what has happened in my life, I believe in excellence. To me, excellence is a virtue. Excellence is a virtue. And so whatever thing I touch must grow, right? Whatever thing I'm doing, it must grow. Now, this all depends. It depends on what I'm doing exactly. Really depends on what I'm doing. I'm thinking for an example. My dressing, for example. I like it in a certain way. Okay? And I want it to be excellent in a certain way based on what I think. So I like to dress formally. Okay? Somebody would like to dress more casually or more contemporarily. You see? So excellence, you're applying it in whatever context you're applying it. Right? But that's subjective to you.
Yeah.
Right? 'Cause that's what you like to do. But in that liking, are your clothes ironed? Right? Are you, do you, the way you tie your tie, you see all of those kind of things. So just back to see, what does success look like to me? It's based on the level that God has trained me in that area. it's based on what I've been, what God has given me in that specific area, right? So if you are to take someone who is a pastor, for example, right? They have the anointing of being a pastor, evangelist, who has the capacity of getting 5,000 people into one room and preaching the word of God to them. And then you take someone who has never done that. Success to them might be just 100 people. But at that point, that's what success is. My pastor, who's my role model, Pastor Chris Oyakhilome, said, you know, success is about spreading your personality to your world. It's we cannot generalize it. We cannot generalize it about how much money you have, the kind of cars you have, but your personality, that which God has given you, your ability, your talent, your gift, what you have to offer this world. If you can share it, you can put it over a canvas, if you can paint the world with that personality, that which you carry, because everyone has something unique that they have, that which you carry, if you can spread it like that to all those around you, then you are a success.
Mm.
No matter how long you are, even before becoming a CA. And to be honest, frankly, I'm quite successful myself already.
I love that mentality, because I think we have to arrive to be successful. You have to journey to be successful. You have to get up and go. You have to walk the walk. And yep. I'm starting to realize that more and more. As you know, I failed last year.
Okay.
Failed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as I'm talking to all these people, even when I just meet people online, and I'm very open about it.
Yeah.
Because I don't, as much as, I didn't make the requirements to get into the next year, I just know there's so much that, one, I'm getting from this experience, and two, that I did already gain from the experience. So if I am smarter, wiser, richer than I was before I quote unquote failed, did I fail? Isn't it only if I didn't improve, if I didn't learn? The hugest lesson for me from this is that we all have experiences that we don't leverage. So my brother, he also failed his CTA.
Okay.
But he's never talked about it.
Okay.
I know so many other people who have failed in their journeys, but they've never talked about it.
Okay.
I failed. Some people have failed like lots of times. But I failed once, and I talk about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what it does? It makes me more relatable.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me power. It gives me lessons. It gives me things. So I'm just seeing like how even you in your student position are not leveraging everything you already currently have. You're not seeing that you can be a success today. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm.
I mean, I like how you look at it.
Mm.
How other people don't talk about it. Because I remember the first class of this year, you mentioned it.
The first class.
The first class. I knew your name from Toastmasters. I was in the Toastmasters group. So I was like, who's that guy? He's like, because I remember it vividly. You said, as you might not know, or as you might know, I failed. I'm a repeat student.
Uh-huh.
This was the first day of class. I was sitting in front of, who's that guy? You understand? I think it really, really testifies to your character. But you see perspective.
Perspective.
How you see it.
Mm.
How do you see it as a knock in the ground, like you're not gonna get up or you're gonna improve from that?
Mm.
I like how you say leveraged. Now every time I hear that word, I'm just thinking of financial management. I'm just thinking of financial management, how you are using debt to leverage your returns. And that is, if you think about it, that is exactly what you're doing. You're leveraging on that.
People see so let's talk about it in like value terms. People see we'll talk about it in percentage terms. They see a 5%, I don't know, rate.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that's a bad one. They see, I'll just talk about it in rands. They see $50. That's what they see. Ah, I failed. Ah, that's $50.
No.
When you see it as not failure, but you see it as feedback.
Yes.
Oh, maybe that's times by 10. That's a leverage multiplier of 10. That's $500.
Nice.
But I see it even further than just failure. I don't just see feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I see fruition. I see it as part of a process. And if you look at all the successful people, a common denominator is failure. Mm-hmm. But what was that failure? Yes, it was feedback. But there's so much more that I'm learning from the failure. It's also lessons for others. Mm-hmm. It's also a way to be more relatable. Yes. I mean, like, we are so deathly afraid of failure as accounting students because we were trained. We were trained when we were young to never fail, to never get it wrong.
Yes.
Get the distinction. If you don't get the distinction, you are a quote-unquote failure. So you got those distinctions. You didn't fail. And now you come to CTA.
Then it happens.
And then it happens. And then what?
You know, I just remember now, one of our pastors in our ministry said, it's not only about where you are, right? You're in a bad position. But it's about how you see yourself about where you are, how you view.
Mm.
What's your view of where you are? Do you see it as you're never going to come back?
Mm.
Right? For example, your second semester. It's so amazing how UP structures its exams, its assessments. Most of them are in first semester.
Mm.
But you are in this bad position. It's not, even if you read the story of Abraham, it was not about where he was, but what he was looking at, what he was seeing. God said, see, I've blessed you. You didn't have a child. God said, see, I've blessed you, right? Father of nations. Not even one child, but father of nations. Where you are now, how do you see? What are you looking at? Are you looking at yourself repeating next year? Have you already made plan B?
Have
you already made plan B of changing universities next year? I think you should not see it that way. I don't subscribe to that.
Mm.
You are in a wrong position. Yes, you have quote unquote failed, right? It's a setback, right? You're not moving at the pace you wanted to. So you've gone back from gear number 4 to gear number 1. Do you still think that you can still get back to gear number 4? An example. This year, I got a mark. I got a 50. I was studying and then the marks came out. Then I got a 50%. I looked at that mark. I just looked at it. I said, oh, nice. I'll get back to it. And then I continued to study. Now, that's because I didn't say... okay, I'm going to pick up my stuff now. And then I'm going to digest this mark.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
By digesting, I mean, let me go and eat and let me take a walk. And people...
let me reflect.
Let me reflect.
Mm.
I was like, wait, that's an anomaly. That's wrong. That's just outright wrong. I just saw the mark. That's just wrong. Right? But I'll deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'll deal with it. Then I go see what mistake I made. Then I come back and go for it in the next class test. And so it's one thing. It's you train yourself to see. Mm-hmm. You don't wake up and you see. You train yourself.
You train yourself to see.
Because your mind, because of, like you said, how you train to see it. Like your mind, your body wants to think failure. It really wants to. It really wants to feel sorry. You really want to feel sorry for yourself.
Yeah.
You don't want to think negatively. But you have to... You have to tell yourself, no, man, I'm not seeing it this way. I'm a success. You see that mark. I remember exactly when I got that 50, I told myself, I'm a success. I never fail. I was looking at that 50 and I was like, I never fail.
Mm.
I'm a smart student. I'm an intelligent student. This is not what I do. This is not what I do. I was still looking at the distinction. When I got that 50,
mm-hmm.
In my head, I had a distinction. I'm still looking at that distinction. You feel me? Because it's a setback.
Mm.
It's a setback. Challenges happen. Bad things happen to good people. Look at the story of Job as well, right? Even in the Bible says, when a man falls down 7 times, he gets up the 8th time.
Mm.
You get up, right? I even like what it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. It says, God will never allow you to be tested beyond what you're able to overcome. That is already implying that you're able to overcome, to come back.
No matter what it is.
No matter what it is.
Because you have the tools.
You have the tools.
Yeah. You have the gifts.
You have the, it's inside you.
Yeah.
Oh, you've just triggered something. my pastor always says, everything you need in life is inside of you. 1 Peter chapter 1, I think, in the Bible says, God has given us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him, right? Everything you need in life, in this life, is inside of you. My pastor always says, the forest is inside of the seed, right? The forest is inside of the seed.
Oof,
the forest is inside of the seed. You just have to place it in the right condition. Because if you take a mango seed, right, you put it, right, creates other mangoes which have seeds as well. You already started planting a forest, right? So the forest is inside of that seed. And what you need is inside of you, really inside of you. Just have to find ways of getting it out.
The imagery is powerful. Yo, the forest is inside.
And that's where we talk about self-development.
Mm.
That's where we talk about self-development, training programs. Doing reading books, because those things, what they help you to do is bringing out what's inside of you, right? Those triggers that we're talking about, it's helping to really bring that out, really bring that out. And challenges as well. Challenges are meant for personal development. That's personal development as well.
Mm.
If you're a student, for example, me, first year was a breeze. Second year was a shock in the system, right? It's like you're traveling at 120 kilometers an hour, and then you get into a muddy road. You understand?
Yeah.
That speedometer just goes back from 120 all the way to 20. Because now you're being trained. That's when the training starts now.
Yeah.
Right? That's when the training starts now. Because you're trained. And through training, that's how you bring out the best of you. We talked about the forest being inside, the potential inside of you is brought out by challenges. Right? Because you're not uncomfortable. That's where we talk about growth is is not in the comfortable zone, in the comfort zone. No, it's when you're uncomfortable. When you're uncomfortable, that's when you realize after that phase, you look back at how did I manage that? But already, you've already pulled out of yourself some of those things.
There was this quote. You even got me thinking about this one quote that I saw in an email list. It was about that, what you're talking about the challenge being the way, the obstacle being the way that you grow through what you go through.
Mm-hmm.
And it says this, and once the storm is over, you won't remember how you made it through, how you managed to survive. You won't even be sure whether the storm is really over. But one thing is certain. When you come out of the storm, you won't be the same person who walked in. That's what the storm's all about.
Mm.
So if you're sitting on that 40 mid-year, it might have been through circumstance. It might have been because you just haven't understood how to approach the course. It might have been that you didn't work hard enough. Could have been anything. This might just be the storm that changes you. And viewing it as the storm that will change you for the better is, I think, the only view you need.
Yeah.
I think that is the first view you need. First. Not oh, I didn't work enough. Oh, regret. Yeah. None of that. That just doesn't help. That's not productive. Get that out of your system right now, because that will not help. See this as a storm that is about to change you for the better. Dude, you have such an eclectic range of interests. Like, you like orchestra, you like, you know, sports, now you're getting into cricket. Like, where did these interests come from? Because I know that these interests came from somewhere or someone.
Yep. Can I tell you of how it was in primary school?
Mm.
I think most of these things came from my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Our daily routine was this. It was in primary school from grade 3. Go to school, come back, then you go for sports, right? That time I was playing soccer and volleyball. And then when you come back, we go for extra classes. So you'd be back at home at about 6, 7, right? And then you only eat and sleep. So that sort of develop my character of I have to do sport and academics. Right? That developed me into saying, I can't do academics only.
Mm.
Like, at that time, I was like, no, I need sport. And in that sport, I was captain in grade five.
Okay.
Of the soccer team with grade sevens as well in there as well.
Sure.
So I had to perform,
right?
I wanted to be excellent in all of this kind of things. But sport, it also came from my father as well. He's an academic-oriented person, but he says, no, sport is good for you.
Mm.
So he allowed us to do sport, and we invested in sport. And now we are at home, we are interested in every sport. We watch every sport, I tell you. Now we just got our favorite sport now is cricket. We were sort of diverted from soccer. It's too emotional.
I agree.
So that's where sport came from. And I started having a phone when I was now the equivalent of grade 8.
Oh.
Grade 8 is high school in South Africa, right?
Yeah.
That was the first time I had a phone. So most of the times, I had to read a book, right? I had to find something somewhere. Funny story, my mom told me I started reading newspaper. It was in grade 1 or grade 2. And newspaper in grade one? It's business newspaper.
How did you do that, dude?
I would never
pick up a newspaper.
I don't know. It was in grade 2 I was reading a newspaper.
Oh.
And my mom would say, every time we pass a billboard, you will be reading billboard out loud. Billboards out loud. And I still do that today. I still read. I like billboards. And then, so that's where sort of, I think the reading aspect interest came from. Orchestra comes from the whole, there's nothing new under the sun.
Hmm.
I like things from long ago, right? I just like classical things. I don't like contemporary things, even books as well.
Hmm.
I like books that have,
stood the test of time.
Stood the test of time, exactly. Right? So that's where, and I think that also came from how my father wanted me to dress. Mm. My father would always say, when you're going to church, Walter, I want to see you in something with a collar.
Mm.
You understand? No round neck, collar. Right? So I started developing this taste of just something basic.
Mm.
My father also dresses like that as well. So then now, at that time, My trousers were tighter. Now my trousers started to be a bit looser, right? Basic dressing, go back to the basics, right? And I remember when I got born again, I stopped listening to hip hop.
Mm.
And I started being more watchful to what I listen to, because what you get in gets out, right? And then I started developing a sense of orchestra. My dad, you know, as I mentioned, these things are coming back.
Mm.
My dad was he liked bits, not bits. Sorry, I'm thinking of Shona now. Sorry.
No, you can translate. You can translate.
He likes rhythm, so would go on these long journeys, and every time we were playing music. And then he liked doing this sounds as the music was going on.
Yeah.
So as a child, I sort of developed a sense for rhythm of sound more than lyrics. So I loved the sound more than what was actually being said. So, and then I got into orchestra. Then I started liking the classical orchestras as well. Cinematic. I started with cinematic orchestra.
Mm.
Remember this guy called White Sand, his music, White Sand, cinematic. You know, when you watch a movie, almost every movie is orchestra.
Yeah.
In the background.
Yeah.
Right? People don't know, but it's actually made by orchestra.
And people don't know that when there isn't someone at the helm who understands orchestral score, the movie will be rubbish.
Yeah.
It'll suck. People don't understand the importance of a good score behind a movie. Even people who play games.
Mm-hmm.
I know my brother loves games. When I'm watching those stories happen, the ones that connect with you in the most visceral way, the most emotional way, it's the ones with the emotional score.
Because the sound, that's where it is.
Mm.
That's where the thing is. John Williams, for example, is old now, but if you watch Steven Spielberg movies, always John Williams who's behind the score. So I loved how the sound would draw you in. It's like this in math. If you watch Transformers, right? Steve Jablonski is the one who made that score.
Sure, you even know the composer.
I know. I remember. I remember. I watched Transformers with my brother, And then when that song came up, my younger brother said, you remember this one? Because there's that time on Optimus Prime Now speaking.
Yo, right? When he speaks in when Transformers. When he speaks,
right? To all my creators. Something like that.
Yeah.
Then that's when it comes in. So I was just intrigued by that. So based on the rhythm, sound more than... Actually, some more sound than the lyrics. I started liking orchestra, and I wanted to find where these met with gospel music. Mm. So then I realized, oh, actually, some churches have orchestra in them. Mm. Right. So then I started to merge with
the
that.
The best ones, and
in gospel and orchestra, you've got these classical hymns as well with orchestra. Lovely, man. I love it. And then UP has an orchestra.
Yeah.
When I listen to orchestra, I like to separate the sounds. You hear it as one sound, but it's an ensemble, right? So I like identifying, is this a bass? Is this a violin? Is it a cello? Is it a bass? Is it a, what kind of, is it this sound? Is it coming from the woodwinds, right? Is it coming from the strings? Is it coming from the percussion side of it? You know, just sort of breaking it down and,
isn't piano classified a percussion instrument?
I'm thinking now, because of its position in the orchestra. If you watch traditional orchestras, yep, most likely, because it's usually with the percussion as well.
If you even think about the mechanics of the piano, it's literally the I need to learn.
Yeah,
the
like
literally percussion. Each key that you press, it manipulates a mechanic that is attached to another thing that pulls that wooden, like little hammer that hits like a bar that creates the sound.
That creates, And
that's why when you hold it, I think like the wood that hits it, it's like a soft, plushy. I've seen it before and I've actually felt it, but yeah, I was just my mind going elsewhere.
Yeah, so that's where orchestra came from. Another interest, what would it be? People. My father and my mother have a lot to do with some most of those interests. My dad was a politician. So my dad is very wise. My mom, very wise people. I mean, when you hear them speak, I used to join board meetings. Okay. I used to join staff meetings of my dad when I was young. And you'd hear how he dealt with people. It's like, that's amazing, man. That's, you just hear him convince people to do what he wanted to do, right? You hear him correct people in a certain way. You hear him manage people, even how he managed us as well. So I started to tap into that because I was around him for a very long time. How he managed family relations for a very long time. How he gave counsel when people came to him with a problem, right? How he solved those problems. And then I just got into this interest of, okay, no, I need to talk to people, right? I don't actively seek it out because of doing these many things to do. But he changed lives through talking to, like, managing people. I remember my pastor, Pastor Chris, said, there's a difference between management and administration. See, many people in the world, in the world of business, they're administrators, not managers. Management is people-oriented. Is people-oriented. Admin are the papers. So he said many managers are not actually managers. You need to be able to handle how to deal with people. You need to know how to manage people. That's management. Right? Not papers, handling paperwork. That's admin.
Not ticking boxes.
Like ticking boxes. No, I have an administrator for that. Why should you be doing that? Manage people. Because you are managing your workforce. Right? That's your resource. Managing that workforce to be able to achieve what you want. And so I think that just intrigued me. And then I became head boy in primary school. I was a prefect and head boy in
so now
in
you got school. To exercise that very thing that you've been learning from your father.
Yes. And my father, usually people would come in secret and you'd counsel them in secret. These things started to happen in primary school, right? Started to happen in secondary school. Someone would come for advice. Then I'll spend 2 hours just talking to them. For example, in high school, I don't know why people came to me, but people came for relationship advice.
I mean, they voted you, man. They voted for you. So why would they not come to you, you know?
Walter, what should I do? I wasn't in a relationship. I was like, okay, sharp. I'll use the wisdom from God's Bible. I'm telling you, it was like that, right? look, man, you lied. You lied to the lady. So what's difficult? No, but Walter, no. Look, fundamental. Right, as men, you need to just tell the truth.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's a good lesson.
So started doing that with so many things and it just developed into something. Mm. It just developed into something. So I like really having constructive
conversations.
I learned something last week. I might forget it. That's why I want to say it.
Okay.
I had a conversation with Riven.
Right? Yes, you academic trainee at UP.
You men, he gave me something. He told me something. He said, Walter, one of the things you can improve your efficiency is being task-oriented, not time-oriented. So when you want to study, you don't want to say study for 10 hours. That's not your goal. You want to say the amount of time you have. If you have 3 hours, you must do the highest amount of work you can do in 3 hours, right? So task-oriented over time-oriented. That has helped me to really improve my efficiency. And that was sort of how I was operating in the background. Why? Because I have a lot of things to do, right? So I can't afford to waste time. Mm-hmm. For me, I do not struggle with concentration.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
Mm-hmm. I can tell this conversation, you've been one of the most present people, probably the most present person I've ever spoken to, Carrion.
So when I sit down to study, I get in the zone there and there because I know I have 2 hours before I have to go for a church program or before I have to follow up on this matter, right? Or I want to read in 2 hours. So I only have 2 hours to study. So every time I study, I'm so efficient. And that's also by the grace of God as well. He's given me the ability to do that. And I just get it quickly. So you end up producing so much, right? In so little amount of time. My previous pastor would always say, Pastor Nkas, you would always say, the most productive people are the busiest people in the world. Why? Because you can't waste time. You don't have time to waste. So that time you have to study. You literally get go. You have to start studying.
Because like now you have this other thing that's coming.
That's coming.
There's another commitment.
You know there's a meeting. You know you have a church meeting, right? Or you have a meeting with someone, right? So you have to make it now. Now is the time to study. So you're awake. Whenever I study, I like to laugh myself. It's like you've ever been in you've been in a moving car. If you get your head out, right? Wind is, that's how I am when I'm studying. It's like I'm chasing something. It's like, that's how I study, right? It's like, because you're catching things quickly. You're understanding things quickly, making notes quickly, doing those questions quickly. You're at race against time. So it's like, I can feel the wind I can really feel the wind because I'm moving at a very high pace. I'm understanding things quickly, right? Because I've trained myself to do that. And also because of, God's ability, he has given me that ability to do that. And that's what I focus on.
I think a huge thing on that you're saying, Unity mentioned it in a previous episode. He's also a fellow classmate of ours. He said that the way he practices questions is under exam conditions. He puts that time on 1.5 minutes per mark, and he does it like he's running at 100,000 miles per hour because that's what it's like in a test. Mm-hmm. He approximates performance in practice. Oh, so I think that's a huge thing that people don't do. They treat every moment of their life as a practice session when practice is life.
Yeah.
Practice training is life. Mm-hmm. And when you treat it like life, you're able to maximize it. You know what I'm saying?
Jeez, man. Love it.
Dude, I just wanted to go back to, first I just wanted to mention that whole management versus admin thing. That thing, that is something I've never heard, which, because I usually look at leadership versus management, which are two different things as well.
Yes.
But now there's that lower layer of an admin. Just wanted to say, well done for that, dude. That's a huge thought that you've gifted me today.
You might want to read Peter Drucker on management.
Managing oneself. Have you read that book?
By Peter Drucker?
Oh, yes.
Peter Drucker.
Yes.
He has a personal... I mean, I know he's corporate management. He has books on corporate management.
Huge, huge.
Managing books. Oneself.
Walter, okay. In fact, everyone, guys, if you feel like you are struggling with purpose on any level, with maybe you don't feel like you're in the right degree, you're in the right... phase. I really believe managing oneself is a book that anyone in an early stage in life has to read, that is about to or is in the early phases of their working career. So it's a book about how to manage yourself in the working world.
Yeah.
And it's about basically just self-awareness. Mm-hmm. One question that people seldom ask, that is just the most obvious thing that you have to get right, is what are your strengths? So we enter accounting knowing our strengths. We're numbers people. That's how we got in. We were maybe interested in numbers, and so we got in here.
Yeah.
But then we go into articles not asking the same question. What are my strengths? And then we go into a profession that doesn't work for us. Maybe we get into banking when that's not actually what your passion and your strength is rooted in. Maybe you get into audit when that's not you. Maybe you get into a retail articles and that's not you. Maybe then you qualify and then you carry on in a corporate career when you know that you have to get up and go to start a business. So answering that question is the first step in managing oneself. And I really highly recommend everyone reading that book. It's 67 pages long. It is the most profound and simple, most sophisticated book I've ever read. I read it one Saturday. I was just there for an hour and I was, bah! And I was like, yo.
Peter Drucker. Drucker has a book on managing one. I have to put that one on my list. I know there's so many books of Peter Drucker in the library. Just a line of Peter Drucker. I know corporate management, yes. But thank you so much. I'll definitely read it.
It's a huge one. And I wanted to actually go back to, I noticed, you know how your father, to be continued in part 2. See you next week.